well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The Second Amendment.
Gentlemen, nice to talk to both of you.
Thank you.
It's really good to talk to you as well. I've been a fan of yours for several years now.
I really appreciate that. Thank you very much.
No, you
really
do a great job.
I'm very grateful for that.
No, and I'm grateful for you.
Bill, what does the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution mean to you as an individual?
Oh, yeah, well, so the answer I would have given you a few years ago is a lot different than the answer I give you now because of how much I've kind of dove into it. And the funny thing is as I've gotten deeper and deeper into the woods and deeper into the history behind it, and the legal stuff that goes with and everything like that, I've actually taken a much more 35,000 foot view. And I think at this point I have even a 50,000 foot view of it. And this is what the Second Amendment means to me. And I honestly believe this is what the Second Amendment means. the Second Amendment goes well beyond your right to bear arms. It's beyond something way bigger than that, way bigger than that. It actually goes even beyond the right of self-defense, which it clearly covers both of those, okay?
Yeah.
But if we truly believe in creationism, where our rights came from our creator, and all the Constitution does is preclude government from taking them from us, then what the Second Amendment is it's the codification of the human right, the basic human right of self-preservation. And there is no more basic, no more quintessential, no more paramount of the universal of human rights than the right of self-preservation. It is the very right by which we exist until the day our creator takes us back home.
Wow, that's quite profound.
And it's the ability to live whatever life and carve whatever path we choose for us and our family during that time as well.
And
that's what the Second Amendment means.
And are you an absolutist when it comes to that? Do you think that there's guidelines or restrictions that needs
yes.
to operate?
That's the lawyer in me will always take over there and say, are there certain guidelines? Yes, there are. Are the guidelines where they currently sit? No, they aren't. They exist on a much wider parameter than where they are right now. And that's the constant struggle that we have as a country is, where exactly do those bumpers lie?
Sure. And so along those lines, what do you think is reasonable regulation to apply to that amendment?
Well, first of all, those on the other side who say, well, absolutists mean that they want to have, you can have nuclear weapons, you can have F-15s, M1 Abrams tanks and things like that. Let's remember that the Second Amendment actually only protects bearable arms. Okay, so anyone that thinks that we get nukes and tanks and F-15s and things like that, those are not bearable arms.
Sure.
I think that there is a clearly delineated test. The test was actually created way back in McDonald. A lot of people think it came from Heller and reaffirmed in Bruin. And that's that the government does have the ability to regulate firearms, which are dangerous and unusual. And it is very important that that be the test, because when that is the test, then it allows the American people to actually determine what is appropriate for their self-defense.
And one of the things that Lee and I actually just learned a couple weeks ago, we were fortunate enough to have Ashley Lubinsky on, and it was interesting to hear her educate at least myself and I believe Lee a little bit on how early some of these arms were more technologically advanced than I necessarily even knew about.
Yeah, and I think that while I bet she was a wealth of information, I think that that is a red herring argument because when we wrote the First Amendment, there was only 9 organized and accepted religions in the United States. All of them were Christian. Do we believe that the First Amendment only protects those 9? The freedom of press, there was no such thing as the internet, no such thing as social media. Do we believe that the First Amendment doesn't apply there? And you can go through all the different constitutional rights and take a look at what the founders contemplated at the time they drafted and what the world has evolved into. 8th Amendment, cruel and unusual punishment. 4th Amendment, search and seizure. So there's no such thing as electronic surveillance when they draft after the 4th Amendment. Clearly cover it? Yes, of course it does. And so does the Second Amendment clearly cover modern firearms? Yes, it covered all firearms that were considered modern firearms at the time that the founders drafted it.
That's very logical.
That's a lawyer's mind, Joe Darrow, yeah. And it's a people complain, but it's a beautiful thing. No, really, it is. It is. Thank you for that.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I'm sure that well, you even mentioned that your perspective of it over the years has changed a little bit. Has some of that change taken place arguing for the Second Amendment or for the right for the people that you've argued over time? That's where it's changed?
Yes. As a lawyer, especially because I spent so much of my career as a trial lawyer, you will go in and you will advance arguments that you know ethically you can make these arguments, but are you really in the right spot? No, you're doing your job for your client. And certainly in getting involved in Second Amendment issues, there are some issues that I believe a lot more stronger than others. Some because I believe the case law is a lot stronger, some things just because I feel just a little bit more personally passionate about it.
I see.
But it has certainly changed my worldview of things. And I think that if you would have asked 25-year-old just about to go into law school, Bill, what I thought of like assault weapon bans and magazine bans, I probably being naive to the gun world and gun laws, I probably would have been like, I don't see why anybody needs those. Right? That would have been my attitude at age 25. Ask me today and I'll tell you it's blatantly unconstitutional.
Well, it's interesting you brought that up because we're here in Illinois and I'm not sure how familiar.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's come out on a few occasions.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, hey, yeah. Listen. But I bet you guys got a lot of listeners out in Illinois. And let me say something real quick. I have connected with Illinois as well. The Washington gun law has connected with that state so well. And you guys, everyone out there in Illinois has been huge supporters of the channel. And every time I come out there or every time I'm at one of these national conventions like Goals where I ran into you guys or I go to SHOT Show, I'll have more people come up and introduce themselves from Illinois than I do even from Washington State. So
we're desperate, Bill. We're desperate.
Everybody in Illinois. We need allies. I love you guys out there.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're looking for help. Are you familiar at all with the current assault weapons and magazine ban that Illinois has in place that's referred to as PICA?
PICA?
Yes.
Listen, that's how I connected with Illinois is I was doing like daily videos on how many Yahoos are actually registering those things after PICA.
Yes, those were great videos.
And the thing about PICA, and this is the thing that I think sets Illinois apart. And I've always said this, for the craziest gun laws in America, you either look at California or Hawaii. But if you're looking for the most evil gun laws in America, you look to Illinois.
I would agree with
Illinois.
That.
Not just what they do to you guys out there, but it's how they do it. That assault weapon ban getting shoved down everyone's throat in 72 hours, no public hearings, no notice, no nothing. That is crazy. At least with the assault weapon ban we got subjected to here in Washington, I was doing videos in December saying, stock up, they're going to do this to it. And the law went into effect like in June. So anyone who didn't stock up in that time just wasn't paying attention. But you guys had no opportunity like that at all.
No, we didn't. We absolutely didn't.
You know, the other crazy thing you got out there, too, is you had that little Freedom Week when you had the judge down there and was it Effingham County or something like that?
Yeah.
Issues an injunction, and now everyone's on a free-for-all, right? Woo! And everyone's buying it up. And that's how I got connected with the folks up at Gat Guns.
Is it? Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think I've seen a video on that. I think you were there, correct?
Well, yeah, but the first time I did a thing with Gat Guns is I started calling around to Illinois when I heard this injunction was in place, and they were like the first ones to answer. And I'm like, how busy is it? She's like, we got a line around the block. And I'm my God, let's hop on the channel with me for a minute.
Yeah.
And that's how I started really getting connected out there. But here's the thing. There's a lot of people who got those firearms. And yet, if you go back and you look at PICA, which is all of PICA is crazy, but you had to have registered them and certified that you owned them prior to January 1st of whatever year the law went into effect. But if you bought it, of course, during the injunction, you'll never be able to do that. So there's a case out there in one of your state courts that basically said those firearms can't be lawfully possessed in that state.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did hear about that one. I haven't seen any updates on that one, but I was made aware of that one. And it's very interesting because there's a lot of that legal and unconstitutionality all rolled into, you know, a case over a course of 1 week.
That thing was in a piece of insurance legislation on a Monday morning, and by Thursday afternoon,
yes,
it was an enacted, signed by the governor, assault weapon and magazine ban with a registration requirement. Yeah. I mean, amazing.
Yeah.
Chicago politics.
And
Illinois
a tax.
Politics.
And a tax.
Yeah, right, right. Oh, yeah, no, like I say, Illinois, nobody treats their citizens more poorly than the state of Illinois.
Don't we know it? But it sounds like, do you think that that's going to end up at SCOTUS?
So right now, you know, it's funny. I just, before I hopped on with you guys, I shot a video kind of going over the conference list for the Supreme Court on tomorrow and then a couple weeks out in the future. And because there's not one after Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And so we have three assault weapon ban cases right now before the United States Supreme Court. Only one of them is in final posture, and that's the one out of Cook County, Viramontes v. Cook County. Oh. Okay. Which, by the way, I will say that the Cook County reply brief is the most offensive thing I've ever read in, like, any Second Amendment litigation. It's just brutal. I did a video about that. The other two cases come out of Connecticut. They were companion cases. They have different names. One's Lamont. One's called Grant. Same case. But that's in an interlocutory, just post losing on an injunction kind of thing. So right now, the Cook County case is in pole position. But this is honestly what I think is going to happen. I think that the Supreme Court is going to take a magazine ban case first because I think it's a little less of a political hot potato. Mm. If you strike down magazine bans and you rule that, well, clearly magazines are arms, therefore they're protected by the Second Amendment and they're in common use, they're not dangerous and unusual, it's per se unconstitutional, you could GVR all of the assault weapon ban cases back down to the lower courts and tell them to do it over.
Wow.
Okay. Now that we saw that post Bruin and eventually courts like the Ninth Circuit, Seventh Circuit, stuff like that, started coming up with ways to just come up with workarounds because they're just hell bent on, you know, upholding some of these things, constitution and law be damned.
Right.
But it would be, if the court structured it correctly, it would be really difficult to do. But California would do it. The Ninth Circuit would uphold it. And so the issue is eventually going to get before the Supreme Court. The problem is you want it there 20, you know, 10 years in the future when it's a 5-4 liberal majority.
Right.
No, I've already felt it's been in place too long.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Duncan case, the magazine ban case that's sitting, coming up on conference on December 5th, that case was filed in 2017.
Wow. No. And that's how long it's taken to get there, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
And is that the core of it, Bill? Is that it's controversial? Do you think that's what makes the court?
Well, I just think that even though Lady Justice is supposed to be blind, she's always kind of taken a peek. And I think that the Supreme Court does try to avoid political hot potatoes. And if they can kick things to the lower court and let them deal with it rather than themselves, they'll do that. This court has shown, I mean, listen, last year, we had the Snope case out of Maryland. It was perfect assault weapon ban case to be taken. Perfect. We had the Ocean State Tactical case, mag ban case out of Rhode Island. Perfect case. Both trial records teed up, ready to go. Petitions denied. Hmm. They don't want – I don't know if they really want to deal with this issue.
Is there a way for SCOTUS to make a ruling in a case where it then makes either a – state or city, a local municipality ban completely unconstitutional?
Yes.
And we obviously have not seen that yet. Otherwise, these would not be in place. So what has to happen?
So for example, let's say that the Cook County case gets accepted. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Magazine case.
Supreme Court hears argument, and then they issue a ruling. And the ruling is we find that semi-automatic rifles, which accept detachable magazines, are commonly possessed arms for lawful purposes. They are clearly covered by the text of the Second Amendment. There's no historical justification to support these bans because they have to be both dangerous and unusual. There's nothing unusual about the most common long gun in America, and therefore these bans, a ban such as this is unconstitutional. That would apply to every single ban because that's exactly how they banned it and why they banned it. This exact reason. Okay. Now, I'll give you an example of how it's supposed to work, and it will get completely out of the gun world for a second. You guys ever heard of the case called Hodges v. Obergefell?
I have not.
I feel like it's ringing around.
You have heard of it. You just don't know the name of it. Yep. It's the gay marriage case.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gay marriage case. Okay. Now, we know that there were some jurisdictions in this country that did not want to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples. On a state level, on a local level, everything. And as a matter of fact, had everyone been willing to do it, Hodges v. Obergefell would have never gone to the Supreme Court, right? It was all about somebody not willing to do it.
Yep, yep. Okay, we're with you.
Bingo, right? The day that ruling came down, did you hear anyone in Arkansas or Mississippi or anyone like that writing an Obergefell response bill?
No.
Nope. They just started issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couple.
Yeah.
Because then that was the law
Why?
Of the land.
Because it was the law of the land. Now, compare that to what happened in Bruin.
Right.
Bruin was supposed to resolve all of this stuff.
Oh, this is great.
What
did we get?
We got, right?
Yeah.
You get the Concealed Carry Improvement Act in New York, a Bruin response bill. You get the Protect Illinois Communities Act, a Bruin response bill. And you get Senate Bill 2 out there in California. Hmm. Literally writing legislation to thwart Supreme Court precedent. That's the battle we're in.
So how did, if it's that clear cut, a violation of a ruling that was just made, how does it stay on the books until it is then once again deemed unconstitutional?
Because until a court of law strikes it down, it is the legislature's prerogative. And what you have in these around the country is what I call jurisdictional bubbles. So if you take a look at like the Seventh Circuit where you guys are at, or the Ninth Circuit where I'm at, you got a bunch of liberal states, which means you also have a bunch of liberal judges sitting on in the circuit courts and in the Court of Appeals. You go to the Fifth Circuit. The Fifth Circuit has like Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi in it. I think Oklahoma might even be in it. Okay. Now, the justices there are very conservative. They would strike down an assault weapon ban in a nanosecond. Except here's the deal. Which one of those four states is actually going to even think about passing one?
Right. Right.
Right? None of them.
None of them.
So we end up with these jurisdictional bubbles where the only divisions to have heard this are these very liberal divisions that have all upheld it. And this is commonly used as a reason for the Supreme Court not to accept review is that, well, there's no circuit split. There's no differentiation of authority here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why what's happening in the Third Circuit in this Cheeseman case out of New Jersey might turn out to be really, really huge, because we could end up with the Third Circuit striking down an assault weapon ban out of New Jersey. And if that happens, the state of New Jersey will crap themselves and they will appeal immediately. And now the Supreme Court's in a position where this is an issue in which there's a circuit split. And it depends on these laws are either constitutional or unconstitutional, depending on what part of the country you're living in. And that is the exact reason that the Supreme Court has to be stepping in.
Mm-hmm. To issue that clarity.
Yep.
Wow. That's fascinating.
That's why I think the young adult case, the 18, 19, and 20-year-old issue, has actually the best chance of becoming the third Second Amendment case accepted this year, because it's literally the circuits are split right down the middle. Half of them said, yeah, this law is totally fine. The other half had said, no, this law is not. So we have to take one of those cases.
I got you. So the job of the Supreme Court is to step in when the lower courts are divided. And because there isn't enough...
Well, the job of the Supreme Court is much larger than that. But that is one of the criteria by which they use to step in.
Gotcha. And because there isn't a lot of divisiveness on the assault weapons ban, because it only exists, like you said, in those bubbles, that criteria isn't necessarily met for the Supreme Court.
That's right. That's right. But when you take a look at it at a micro level, it still means like, for example, I live in a state where you can't buy a semi-automatic rifle.
Other citizens
you guys live
can.
In a state where,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And you guys live in a state like to do. But I can get my car, like where I went to college, I'm 5 minutes from Idaho. Five minutes from the Idaho border.
Wow.
And in Idaho, right there, you walk right into a store and buy one. And, you know, you're going through a background check and all of that stuff. But once you pass, you're walking out of there with it. Literally crossing. So we already have this tapestry of constitutional rights, which is the frustration of why people want to see the Supreme Court just step in and take this and do something about it. But the problem, of course, is it's a matter of caseload. And the Trump administration has kept the Supreme Court really busy. And I shouldn't say the Trump administration, the efforts by lower courts to thwart the Trump agenda has kept the Supreme Court remarkably busy.
Yeah, they have. They absolutely have.
There's the only one thing that sort of crosses my mind is that this is the Second Amendment. And I wonder if it was any other amendment, how different
that
would be handled.
Well, take a look at this. As a matter of fact, I'm doing a live thing about a big argument that was done in the Oregon State Supreme Court. You guys got that Floyd card out there in Illinois.
Yes, we do.
And we're going to go to something sort of like that come May of 2027 here in Washington State.
Oh my goodness.
And so think about this. Name any other constitutional right. Any other constitutional right where you got to take a class, perhaps do some training, pay a little bit of money, and get government's blessing and okay from before you get to actually exercise that right.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because on my way over to meet up with Lee, I was talking to a gentleman, and he wanted to make sure that I told you he said hello, and that was Alex Shea of GOA. He said, make sure you tell Bill.
Oh, yeah.
It said hello. And he was.
GOA, man. Those guys like to knock heads around, too, man. They did good work.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of the GOA these past couple years for a lot of their efforts and what they're doing. But him and I were talking about something along the same lines, that if you're a reporter, you don't have to go somewhere, take a class, get certified as a reporter, go get a license, get fingerprinted, get a background check in order to then have, the freedom of
report
the press. You know, you can walk out of your house and you can be considered a journalist, and you can almost attach.
Well, how about going to church?
Right, all of it. But it's interesting, because right along those same lines, it's the only right that we have that's spelled out that I'm aware of, that in a lot of situations you have to jump through hoops in order to exercise. And I'm pretty certain it's not supposed to be
the redheaded stepchild of the Bill of Rights.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about that.
It's shocking.
There was a question. And this was perhaps one of the best questions I saw come from the bench. It was from a justice in the Oregon State Supreme Court.
Let's hear it.
They argued they have a licensing regime going into effect in Oregon down there. And they argued it exclusively under their state constitution, which says that you have the right to keep and bear arms for self-defense. Okay. And the question was, do you know any other constitutional right that you have to take a class and training and pay money before you exercise? And the state's attorney was kind of like, no, I really don't. And he tried to start justifying. He goes, well, let me stop you there for a second, because it says here that the right is codified in Article 1, Section 27 of the Oregon State Constitution, is that it's for the purpose of self-defense. So are you telling me that until they take this class and prove their worthiness, if they're attacked, they just have to sit there and take the beating?
Right.
Well, think about that. That goes to show the absurdity of what the Floyd card is.
Yeah, you're not going to get an argument from us over here. 100%. In fact, if I recall correctly, and I don't have any information in front of me, but I want to say the Floyd system's been ruled in court to be unconstitutional, and it got appealed and stayed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the whole pre-purchasing licensing requirement, because really what this turns out to be is you have to go through a background check before you can go through a background check. Right, because you got to go through a background check to get your Floyd card. You got to have your Floyd card to go buy a gun. But when you go buy a gun, they're going to run you through the same damn background check that the folks of the Illinois State Police did. It's ridiculous.
It is. So where do you see this fight going? Just continually a cycle.
I honestly, the pre-purchase licensing thing, I think, unfortunately, knowing the court having so little bandwidth, I think that's a phenomena that we're going to be stuck with for a bit. I really do. And I think that there's some language in the Bruin opinion that gets misused. It's called Bruin footnote 9, but it gets misused, allows a lot of these jurisdictions to argue the constitutionality of it.
And of course, the people that are anti-gun or pro-regulation, they view it differently. And obviously, they interpret that verbiage differently.
Yeah, they do. But, you bring up a good topic. You bring up a good point here, which I think I want your listeners to be aware of, which is, let's talk about who the anti-gun crowd is. And I don't know how much you guys have to deal with them. I deal with them quite a bit. Okay.
This is great.
And here's what I've noticed about the anti-gun crowd. And this is where I think this is an opportunity for us. Okay. My experience, and I've talked to other people to see if their experience is the same too, is that when you talk to the anti-gun crowd, about 10 to 15% of them have had something personally happen in their life where their life was affected by gun violence, and they are emotionally completely invested in the anti-gun movement. And I don't think there's any moving those people. Okay.
I
really don't.
Yeah, that's logical.
And I think that unless we were in their shoes, we really can't comprehend what it's like to be in those shoes, right? Okay.
Sure.
So let's just give them that. But then that still leaves, what, 90 to 85% of them. Those 90 to 85% are just completely naive to anything about guns at all. The usefulness of them, the utility, they don't know they don't know the difference between an AR-15 and a 50 BMG. They don't know anything, yeah. Right?
Right.
And it's that naive that the civilian disarmament regime preys upon. And we, as 2A advocates, don't do a whole lot about it. But that is territory that is still up for grabs. That's capturable territory if we come up with inviting on-ramps to get a lot of people to at least, even if you don't want to suddenly go from no guns to I got a huge gun collection, but you at least understand why people have them and the usefulness of them and all of that. We can start weeding away. We can start chipping away at that anti-gun crowd.
Yeah, and it's about... Basically, it starts with a level of education, correct? Like why somebody would have one, whether it's self-defense or sport or practical use, kind of like just opening their eyes as to a firearm being a tool.
Education is the biggest weapon we have in our favor because we have the law, the Constitution, facts, common sense. All of that is on our side. So why wouldn't we continue to educate?
Yeah. I agree with you, and I would say, boy, for the better part of a year, we've put forth a lot of effort to try and get opposing views and Democratic politicians on the podcast to have the conversations and not necessarily have a debate or a gotcha moment, but hoping that having conversation with an opposing view could potentially reach more people in that segment that you're referring to.
Right.
Because operating in an echo chamber doesn't gain any ground. It's getting the people that are ambiguous.
We had one guest that was representative of that, right? We had the one gentleman who was a teacher.
Yep.
And he came on the podcast and he left with an open mind.
He did. And
cool.
Yeah, he said some things that were a little surprising to me when I asked him, you know, his name was Kevin. And I said, Kevin, what, you know, if you had the decision to ban a certain kind of firearm, what would it be? And of course, I expected, you know, an assault weapon. And he said pistols. And his reason for pistols was they're that much easier to conceal. And compared to what people consider assault weapons, pistols are used more often in crimes. And I wasn't really...
Oh, no doubt about that.
Absolutely. But it wasn't the answer I was expecting. And he actually volunteered to come back. So we're gonna make sure that happens. But for that sole purpose, to educate.
Yeah. And he agreed to...
But you know what? See, but that's great because he's willing to be educated, but he's also willing to share his thoughts openly. Here's my thoughts and my reasoning behind it. Now you guys have stuff to talk about.
Right. We just need to... reach more people with an open mind. And I'm curious, you know, of that 85 to 90% that are left, how many of those people have an open mind? You know, I think there's a certain amount of people that are, if they're just say 45, 50 years old, and they've never been around or in favor of firearms.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I think that the group that may have an open mind would be the youngest segment of that. And I do think that you're seeing a movement from young people back to more towards conservative ideals.
Yes, I agree.
And I think that's the most important group to capture, because they're going to be voting longer than all of us will be. And they could actually turn firearms back into a generational thing that happened in this country for many, many years, where, you know, you talk to people, like when I'm out in Illinois and I start talking to people down in central and southern Illinois, it's like fourth generation Illinois. They all had firearms on the family farm kind of thing, right?
Yep. I think getting that point of education back into the into schools, which used to be so much more common, could advance the what I call the movement, advance the movement to such a high level. But man,
you'd have to reverse the course of public education in this country, and in states like yours and mine, that is that the Titanic's half underwater already.
Yeah, but it's still, I guess it's still, it's a lofty goal, but mm-hmm. like you said, getting to the younger people, you know, it used
to
be in schools.
Do you want to know the easiest way? Do you want to know the easiest way to end the gun debate forever? It could be done in about 3 years.
Sure.
It could be, seriously, this is what you do.
Yeah.
You arm every single soccer mom in America. You train the living hell out of them. You make them proficient. You make them really good at it. I mean, you know, the ones driving the minivans around, taking the kids everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You just show them what a valuable tool it is. And then after about 3 years, you go, okay, ladies, we're going to take all the guns back now.
Yeah.
What do you think the reaction is all of a sudden?
They probably, once they feel empowered and they realize that firearm is an equalizer against people that want to do evil against them or their kids, they're not going to want to give that up. And that's a great point.
See, I don't even think they even have to feel the sense of empowerment as much as once they realize that you're taking a tool away that can hinder their ability to guard their flock,
kids, yeah.
Their cubs.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think that's a philosophical. I don't think it's a spiritual. I don't even think it's a political reaction. I think it's a biological reaction at that point. Something that's like genetically programmed into them, which is beautiful, which makes them so wonderful, right? But when all of a sudden it's like, yeah, ladies, we're going to make you less effective at protecting your family now, they're going to be like, no, you're not. No, you're not.
Yeah. I've had some women in the – I'm a public school educator. And then on the side, I've run a self-defense and personal protection training for many, many years now. And I came across at some point some women saying that men go through life a lot of times and I don't think this is necessarily true, but we don't experience fear as often as many women do. Fear of someone else hurting them or harming them. And that is something that I think does come up for women more often. If you could give them that sense that there is an equalization factor that comes with that particular tool, and that would be a big part of it to maintain that right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say this. I'm not sure that women experience fear more than men. And here's why. I think that women, when they experience fear, they look scared. When men experience fear, they look angry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you take a look at how much anger we get out of the male species, I'd say that we're probably running around. Yeah, we might be fearful about different things.
Yeah.
We might be afraid of different stuff.
Yeah, I think it is fearful different things.
You know, life does throw us a lot of curveballs.
Yeah. Well put.
Yeah, absolutely. You're also a proponent of individual self-defense and the right to keep and bear arms, obviously. Is that something that you've always believed in, you know, from a young age? Is that something from the individual perspective?
Yes, from the individual perspective, I have always felt, as far back as I can even trace my political awareness, I've always felt a strong sense of individual freedoms and liberties.
Hmm.
I think that's what makes us uniquely American,
yeah,
is to have those individual freedoms and liberties. When I began to really get involved in the Second Amendment is when I began to realize how important it was to basic human rights. And if you don't believe me, take a look at what's happened to societies that have disarmed their citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
If you don't think that that has anything to do with human rights, well, you go back in the history books. You don't even have to look that very far to find it. And can I tell you guys an interesting story about the day it kind of all came to?
Of course. Actually, that was the question that I had. I was going to ask you, like, you know, you described yourself as this lawyer that, you know, was sort of, you know, questionable on, you know, sort of assault weapons. And now you're a guy who's, one of the reasons that attracted me to your videos early on was that you were like this fountain of knowledge about this particular subject. So you had quite the transformation. And if you'd like to share all that with us, I think that would be very, very interesting for our listeners.
The funny thing is the channel got started on accident, okay?
Wow.
I never intended to be a content creator at all, okay? Wow. What happened was is I had this little standalone website called Washington Gun Law. It was just, how do you get a concealed carry license in Washington State? How do you not be an idiot with a gun?
Yeah.
Here's the laws on self-defense. And it was just a standalone website. And I had a phone number associated with it, but whatever. That's all it was. And then we had in during the pandemic, we had our little summer of love out here in Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, we had an independent sovereign state staked out in Capitol Hill, yep. Seattle. And it was just crazy. It was absolutely crazy.
I think that's when the and algorithms the sponsors, fed you to me.
Well, I didn't even have a YouTube channel then.
Wow.
I didn't even have
was,
a YouTube channel.
It was really early.
Nothing. I've only been doing this a little over 4 years now.
Yep.
So this is the summer of 2021. Seattle's okay. burning.
Yeah.
And people are freaking out. And I can't just return 45 phone calls and give people the same free legal advice over and over and over. Lawyers just don't have the time
yeah,
to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we were in the middle of the pandemic. Everything was still locked down. All the court hearings were being done 2 minutes on Zoom. I had nothing to do. And so I literally jokingly said to the staff, write down the 4 or 5 questions they ask all the time. I'll do videos on them. We'll put them on a YouTube channel. We'll just tell everyone to go to YouTube and watch it. And that's what we did. Okay. Automated messages. If you're calling about this, this, or this, you know,
right. Yep.
And I had nothing to do that whole summer. And so I'd go into my office that no one else was using, but I was still paying rent for. And I'd read the few comments I'd get, and inevitably one person would be like, hey, you should do a video about this. And so I'd do a video about this, and next day do a video about that. And it would just, you know, each video would get a few hundred views, whatever. One guy asked me to do a video one day about how do I get a suppressor in Washington State. So I went home and did all the homework to make sure I knew what I was talking about.
Yep.
Next day I do the video. And then my Facebook page gets inundated with ads for solvent traps. And I'm like, what the hell is this? It's a solvent trap.
Yeah.
So I started looking into it and I realized, oh, I see what they're doing. They're playing a little game here. So I did a video like the next day, like, hey, solvent traps, bad idea. Don't do it. Right?
Yes, absolutely.
And I had two reasons for not doing it. Well, number one, they're cheap pieces of crap made in China. So when you pull the trigger the first time, say a prayer. And secondly, you know, the ATF could find out about this and they're going to be pretty ticked off. And the video actually got like 5,000 views at the time, which for me was like big time, right?
Sure.
But like 4,000 of the comments were like, you suck. You're probably working for the ATF. You call yourself a Second Amendment lawyer, blah. You know, it was brutal. Well, about 6 months later, I get an alert from YouTube and it's like, dude, this video just picked up 35,000 views in a day, which I'm like, what? Yeah. What's going on? So I go and I look and yeah, this video is just blown up. It's like 6 months old, but now it's blowing up. And so I start Googling like what's going on with solvent traps. And lo and behold, what had happened was ATF had raided Diversified Machine that was importing things. They grabbed all the shipping records. They sent nasty letters to every one of those people saying, hey, we think you got an unlawful suppressor. We want to talk to you.
Right. Right.
And so I did a video the next day, like, I freaking told you so. But now here's what you need to do and not do because you're going to have to deal with the ATF. And that video blew up, got like 100,000 views in like 12 hours or something. And that's the first time I realized like, oh, there might be a national audience for a lawyer who can just talk to people like normal people talk.
Yeah.
And that's when I started looking outside the state of Washington for topics. And that's how I found Illinois.
Yep.
That's how the assault weapon ban that was going down there. And I did like one video about it and it got a whole bunch of views. And I realized like, God, there's no lawyer out there talking to the Illinois folks, giving them like, hey, here in simple English, here's what's going on.
Right.
With your rights.
Yeah.
And I just found a connection point with the appreciative of that. I was giving them straight information that I just kept feeding it to them and they kept consuming it.
Yeah, that's great. But so your journey into the court system and 2A, they weren't in the beginning, they weren't necessarily aligned. You didn't become an attorney for anything.
Yeah, I went to
the 2A.
Yeah, I went to law school to be a sports agent and then never did any of that. Got into the courtroom as a law student and really found out that I enjoyed it and I was really good at it. So I got offered when I was in law school, a job with the King County Prosecutor's Office here in Seattle, yep. Biggest prosecutor's office in the state as a trial deputy, got in there for 3 years, just tried a ton of cases. We had an elected prosecutor at the time, a wonderful gentleman, one of the great honors of my career to be able to work for him. This back when we still used to police the community around here too. Seattle was great back then. And, became a really good trial lawyer and then got hired away by a private firm and worked my way from associate all the way up to the owner of that firm. And then the pandemic rolled around and I was looking for a pivot point because I had built a big practice, but I built myself like this prison cell within the practice. I was just tethered in all directions at all times. And I was getting into my 50s and my kid was about to head off to college. And I'm like, what am I going to do? This is horrible now. And and then along comes this opportunity with Washington gun law. And I was about a year and a half into it when I realized, like, you know, I might be able to do this more of a full-time thing. And so that's when I really started dumping the effort into it.
Wow. Quite the journey.
Yeah. And I think because I came into it with never the intention of being a content creator. And I came into it thinking this is going to be a vanity project until the world goes back to normal after the pandemic, that I never came into it really making it about me or anything like that. It's like, let's just make it about, here's what's going on. I'm going to give it to you in simple English. And then I realized that that was a formula that it works for the viewer. And it also keeps me out of trouble.
Yeah.
Right. Cause I don't wade out into crazy areas that some content creators go to get views.
Yep.
Yeah. But the content is what so many people are looking for because they can understand it and it's succinct.
Yeah. It's cogent, it's succinct, and it's logical, understandable for people. That those are all the things that attracted me.
Easy to digest. You know, you can go on there.
Well, let me tell you the difference of there are two types of lawyers in the world. Okay. There are trial lawyers and there's everybody else. Okay. And the difference between trial lawyers and everybody else is this: trial lawyers have to communicate just like every other American communicates. You want to know why? Because hundreds of times in our lives, we had to stand in front of a box of people who weren't smart enough to get out of jury duty, who did not want to be there. And we had to tell them a better story than the other side did. And you don't tell great stories by using words that people don't know what the hell you mean. You don't tell great stories by using language that hasn't been used in 50 years or throwing Latin around the courtroom. You tell great stories by telling believable stories using understandable language. And that's what the trial lawyer can do. The good trial lawyers do it better than the rest. And so all I really do is I do a closing my videos are a closing argument. I take what is a 35-page opinion or 20 pages of legislation, and I'm going to give it to you in 10 minutes in simple English. You might be completely furious when you're done watching the video because it's oftentimes bad news, but at least you'll be like, now I get it.
Yeah.
Now I understand it.
Yeah.
And I won't deliver it in a way that's meant to incite you. You can all get yourself incited and for good reason, but you don't need content creators throwing gas on the fire and telling you how to think. Just give them the stuff to think about.
Yeah, do a beautiful job of it.
Thank you.
So going back to the goals event that I met you at, Gun Owners of America as a whole, you don't necessarily like represent them, right? You're independent.
No, I have no official relationship with Gun Owners of America. But what I do with my content is obviously there are cases that will be gun owner of GOA cases. There will be Second Amendment Foundation cases, FPC cases. And because I don't have exclusive relationships with any of them, I can show them all love, which is great.
Yeah.
And that's why anytime if we're doing a GOA case, there'll always be a link down in the description box for people to donate to GOA. Same with, you know, if the NRA was doing a bunch of cases, I'd have links for the NRA down there all the time too.
Yeah.
So anybody who's willing to be in the fight, we all got to put some skin in the game.
Awesome.
You know?
Yeah. And it's interesting you say that because, one of the things Lee and I have talked about is me as an individual, Lee as an individual, even us as a pair, you know, if we want to try and do something, we only have so much power. We only have so many resources. But when people can sign up for an organization such as GOA or Second Amendment Foundation and contribute to them as that movement, there's so much more teeth because there's the resources, there's the relationships, there's the existing infrastructure that allows them to go fight for us. And that's
absolutely
why we often encourage people to sign. I mean, there's a lot of great organizations, right? Second Amendment Foundation.
Well, and listen, membership has its privileges too, because we've had at least a couple. Okay. Brace rule. And there's now one with the post office where the people who will enjoy the benefits of that ruling were who? Organizational members of those groups at the time when the suit was filed. So if you were a member of GOA or SAF at the time they filed the suit, that post office ban no longer applies to you.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's a great point. Right. A benefit of membership. But, you know, in a lot of these organizations, it's not a huge financial burden. You can donate $10 a month, $50 a year, and
they'll
obviously
take whatever you're willing to give them.
Absolutely.
But yeah, every little bit counts.
But they do such a great job. And then that summit goals, bringing everybody together and having some of the major firearms, I think Palmetto State Armory was a large sponsor of that, and they made a huge donation to Gun Owners of America.
Yeah, yeah, and Palmetto State's a company that I do have the pleasure of working closely with through Right to Bear, because they're owned by Palmetto State, so I've gotten to know the folks that run that company, and they are just top to bottom. They got some fantastic people over there. Wow. They really do.
Yeah, and along the
but
lines.
Yeah, I could have. The thing about the GOA, what I love about the GOA conference, Goals in Knoxville, and if anyone's thinking about now, next year it's going to be in Des Moines, Iowa, actually.
Yep, we're planning on going.
Okay. Yeah, well, so for all you Illinois folks out there, that ain't too far, man. You should be able to make that one. Come on now.
Yep, absolutely.
But you got to remember that SHOT Show is like, it's 13 acres and it's crazy, and we got other names that we call it. And if you're really looking to go network or meet people, SHOT Show is just way too big. It's like trying to network at Mardi Gras. It's just ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
Goals is a much more manageable level. And you also got to remember the SHOT Show is put on by NSSF, which is the trade organization. Goals is actually put on by an organization that's out there fighting for your Second Amendment rights. So there is a slightly different theme and atmosphere to it as well.
Absolutely. I went to SHOT Show January of this year. It was my first time ever going. Everybody told me it'd be overwhelming, and I'm like, nope, I have a plan. I've got my map.
I started with blackjack at 8 a.m. and then I
My plan went right out the window. It's massive. It is overwhelming. It's very cool. I probably won't go every year. You know, every 2 or 3 years I'll try and go. But I think I'm going to try and make that goals event as often as possible.
Yeah, I have to do them all because that's just what you do. What I do now, but and nothing against SHOT Show, and I'm. As a West Coast kid, Vegas is a super easy trip for a Seattle kid. So I've been to Vegas, you know, more times than I love that city. And the funny thing is, I don't drink or gamble, and yet I still love Las Vegas. So
it's still fun.
The golf is insane. The food is fantastic. I love that town.
Yeah,
yeah. And if you enjoy people watching, there's no shortage of that to do there either.
Some of the three best people watching: Times Square, New York, the Las Vegas Strip. But you guys have got to go check out. Oh, it's not Manhattan Beach. It's the beach right there south of Santa Monica.
Oh, I don't know.
It is Venice Beach.
Venice Beach. Oh, yeah. I was there when I was a teenager.
God. People watching in Venice Beach, California. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I avoid California. Lee, did you have any other questions?
Has been great. It's been an honor to talk to this guy, you know, and just like the videos that he puts out, this conversation has been very enlightening. So, yeah, I'm happy as a clam.
Great. I am also very grateful for you calling in, Bill.
I appreciate you guys having me on, man. This was fun. I appreciate the chance to talk to you guys.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And then what I'll probably do is before we head out to Goals, I'll just shoot you a message, and maybe we'll meet you face-to-face again out
in
Des Moines.
Yeah, if you get a wild hair up here, you know what, you decide to come to Vegas, hit me up. I will probably just be hanging out. Now that I have a base of operation, I don't have to roam like a nomad anymore, so I'll probably be just at Palmetto State Armory.
All right.
Gotcha. Okay, good
That'd
to
be
know.
Great.
All right, Bill.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. It was a real pleasure.
No, thank you. It's been a pleasure as well.
You have a great weekend.
Yeah, you guys stay safe. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right.